and somebody for whatever reason says, I can only do eight. You know, that is the type of thing at least you can consider, and then you get into whether there's a hardship and so forth that would justify it. What's not allowed is, you know, I'm in a residential zone, I want to put an Advance Auto Parts, you know, in it. That's considered a use variance. So, you know, the one question that was raised is, you know, is allowing a second sign when you have an ordinance that says you can only have one, is that an impermissible use? And it gets into some fine points, because in this case, they said it's not. It's at least something you can consider. It's more of a dimensional type thing. It's, you know. So I guess my point in pointing that out is that, you know, the courts on some of these, you know, it's a close call and it could go either way. I mean, they pointed to a case which they found to be different, which was where it was a fence ordinance, and the person came in and said, you know, I want an 8-foot fence where the limit was 6 feet. And, you know, in that they said, you know, it's absolutely, you know, prohibited or whatever. But in any event, there's obviously some room for wiggling on some of these, and they're just not as clear, you know, as they may come across.
So what was the ultimate outcome?
That I do not know, other than what took place at this court. They don't report what happens, you know, in the, other than the Court of Appeals. It was sent back, and the way that the order reads it, it says, you know, it's sent back to the Board of Adjustment with for proceedings consistent with this ruling. That's the language they use, which is kind of vague. You would think if they're going to go to the trouble to say it's got to go back to the Board of Adjustment, they'd tell them exactly what they're supposed to do. But I think from reading this, one of the problems was they, you know, I mentioned that that they were kind of, the board was kind of just summary in their findings, and the court said that was not sufficient, that there was not enough there. Basically, you had to go through the minutes and just try to guess what the findings were, and that was not sufficient. So, at least from this court, which was the Court of Appeals, they just sent it back, and the implication seemed to be you need to set out more specific findings so we can at least tell, you know, if your decision was based on enough evidence. And one thing I'll mention, these, you know, once it gets to the Court of Appeals, it's a little different than if it was at New Hanover Superior Court or Brunswick County Superior Court. If it's at the Court of Appeals or the court above that, the North Carolina Supreme Court, those are basically controlling. The rulings that they issue are controlling essentially just like the state statutes. And so, you know, I know sometimes John, you know, will get after me and say, well, why do we have to look at these cases with different ordinances in different towns? You know, that, you know, what relevance does that have? Well, and if they're, you know, you might have one that's kind of close and one that's not very close that goes to the Court of Appeals, and that's the only guidance you have. And because if you end up in court, you'd be pointing to those and say, oh, it looks most like this or it looks less like this. So they really are the guiding law, essentially, on, you know, how the local boards should handle their business.
So really what they're saying here is that the Board of Adjustment didn't do a great job in detailing the findings of fact, and in which case they just sent it
right
back.
Right. I mean, the board, I guess, what basically happened was initially the board said, for one thing, you know, it looks like a use variance, so we shouldn't even hear it. And the court said, no, it's not as clear-cut as that. We don't think it's a use variance, so you could get past that threshold where you initially kind of kicked it out. And, you know, is it? And then they had basically said right off the bat, we think it runs totally counter to the ordinance, you know, so that it runs against the spirit. We shouldn't even consider it. And the court said, no, that's not right necessarily either. And then they also said you didn't find enough specific findings of fact.
And what was that? Just if they actually detailed the facts in the first place,
right,
the first two things might could possibly
possibly so. That would have helped.
What would have been detailed the facts saying ordinance number 56-22 states that no more than one sign can be on the place? Is that what they were looking for?
What they're looking for primarily, the standard that the courts use is whether there's evidence of substance. That's the terminology they use to support the board's decision. So they want to see a specific list of what the findings are. You know, like in this case, it would be factual findings like, you know, if you look more through, and I have a site that can provide you the full text. The text was like 18 pages of each of these cases. But what it would be was like, in this case, all the doctor's patients were driving past every time because there was an assignment for his business, and he cited the fact that, you know, if he had a medical emergency and an ambulance needed to come, they would probably pass it by too. So those were some of the things that would have weighed into, you know, whether it would have justified having a second sign.
But what if the ordinance said only one sign per commercial building? It seems like to me what they should have told him is, go back to your landlord and tell him to get a bigger sign that fits all the units that are there.
That's right. That's what I was thinking too.
That's what I've been thinking since this whole thing was. It sounds like to me the developer didn't get a sign big enough to put 10 slots, but he's got 10 units.
The cost between all the units, I think that's been.
I mean, that would have been.
I think in the background of this one was that there was also a dimensional issue on the signs. Like, you couldn't have a sign any bigger than such. It's kind of like we've been looking at here.
Right.
You know, and
normal.
So, you know, with.
I would think they'd reconfigure it or.
Right.
You know, the verbiage on the sign, you can make the. Change the lettering or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, whether
it has one size, why wouldn't you just put it over each office or put it on the doors or something? Have a sign,
true.
Vinyl or something, just to make it where everybody could.
And apparently, that he did look at doing something on his building itself, you know, as a way around it. And so that, but some of those, you know, since the issue is on a variance is always whether there's a hardship and whether it's related to, you know, the property and so forth. Those would be the kind of considerations.
Well, I would think if you had a business and didn't have a sign, that would be a hardship. It's just a hardship for anybody that's got a business and don't have a sign.
Yeah,
it also sounds like you're renting a place that the person that built it didn't take into account the right stuff. And if you rented a place that didn't, they wouldn't afford you the sign. That's, you know, you got to do your own diligence.
I would really think that 75% of your business comes from that sign. That's for sure. That's what. Every business wants
a storefront.
Yeah. Yeah, the shopping center, like you said, the shopping center, there are 10 businesses in the shop. There's 10 suites in the shopping center. They needed to make that sign big enough.
For 10.
Mm-hmm. Within the confines.
Oh, right.
The sign ordinance. Yeah. And just add to it when another tenant comes in.
Yeah.
And if he had built 11 units but only had space for 10 signs, and it should say in his lease, you don't get a sign. They would have to know.
The next person that leaves, you can have their spot.
That's true. Have a sign.
First come, first serve.
The landlord would know that because when they built the place, they would, you know, when they were buying the sign, that would have been known knowledge.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I'm from complete agreement.
There are some places that just rent space and don't really have a business. They just run in their business and don't really look for public traffic, so they might not need a sign.
Yes. Well, and that does raise another question because so many of these, and you know, there's a rule generally that says, you know, economics are not supposed to be a hardship. You know, that you hear that a lot, and you know, and that is true, but then at some point they're all economic. You know,
he made it economic when he put his sign up there for $7,200. I mean, he made it clear that he had went and done that
right.
And asked for forgiveness
right.
Instead of permission.
But you'll see, you know, sometimes when the council of government folks will come and different things will say, you know, just because somebody spent money, that doesn't mean that's a hardship. That's not what we're talking about. You know, the textbook kind of classic hardship is, you know, there's a giant boulder or something on my property and I can't, you know, in order, I can't even build a house unless it curves a little bit and gets into the setback. You know, that's something that is you know, created by...
Hardship goes with the land.
Right. And then there's no, you know, it's supposed to be something unusual about the land that makes it so that you can't get it.
But when you get it to the court, they humanize it and they feel sorry for them spending the money.
Right. So it a lot
that's
of times...
That's hardship comes in. That's what I've seen happen
right.
In my life down here at Curry Beach. I mean, once they put the pilings in the ground... It's a hardship. It's hard to stop a project once they get the pylons in.
They saw that problem, though.
Yeah, they solved it.
We have solved that problem. Carolina and Kira Beach have solved that problem. We set pilings in the ground. We have to have a. We are supposed to turn in a piling foundation, any foundation. I don't care if it's pilings or brick or concrete. We have to call a surveyor and have a foundation survey done. Right then, right there.
We had
so you kind of nip it.
Hearing that we had one property on Alabama Avenue where...
I know about that one.
Yeah, they actually built the house too close because they didn't realize it was a 90-foot
right-of-way
or whatever. And we went ahead and, because the place was already built, they're trying to get a conditional... They're trying to get a occupancy and couldn't get it because John said, oh, wait a minute. And the surveyor went, oh, my bad, and took off. So they had another survey done and realized, okay, yeah, it is in setback. We went ahead and granted them the variance because they'd have to tear the entire house down and rebuild it. But
I'm probably not the right person to be asking this question since I did this for a living. But it is something. Wouldn't that fall back on a surveyor's general liability?
Exactly. Question. If we had not granted the variance and they had to tear it down and rebuild it, that would have gone back.
I would file bankruptcy.
What if you had insurance company? What if he doesn't have insurance?
It happens all the time.
Well, that happens too. A lot of engineers and surveyors don't have insurance for that kind of thing. And then what happens?
Well, that would fall. Oh, I really am digging a hole for myself here, but I do check all this stuff myself. We like with my company, I just
you
give
bonded you for every time you do a job.
You daggone right. I have to have a workman's comp, my general liability of a certain and named a beneficiary or a second on there. I can't think of the exact name it's called, but not everybody does it. I was just curious about that because you probably did the right thing in granting the guy a variance because that would have been a huge court battle, I'm sure, but...
It's a hardship. The court gets it, and they feel sorry for him, and they let him win the money. That's what usually happens. That's what I'm saying.
They would have given it to him anyway.
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission sometimes.
Well, it only goes with if a hurricane knocks that property down, then it has to go back to
where it is, right.
So it just went with that property as it is right now.
No grandfather in.
Right.
Gotcha.
Because I just... doing a house in Carolina Beach, and the original surveyor got it wrong. But
I'm just thinking about that. My place, it just burns me up every time I get in here. I can't help it. I can't stand it.
Yeah. Mm. Well, they took advantage of you.
I know.
Atlantic
Avenue. Yes.
And then they tried to come back.
And they came in here school Bibles, and that like they were living in that shack with that tarp on the roof. Liars. That wasn't a builder. Had nothing to do with it. It was just the owners.
Well, they do. The surveyors do make mistakes. I will say that.
Yeah. And that's
and I mean, too, the culpability or whatever, the fault of the owner comes in. You know, is bound to come into play. Like if you had someone who did not build a property, didn't build the structure, got it surveyed, and somehow the surveyor made a mistake. You know, and then they now owned it for 2 years, didn't create it, and bought it with all due diligence. It's awfully hard not to say, you know.
Yeah,
and that's not
that.
A hardship.
Well, Carolina Beach granted one next to the property I'm building on Texas right now. I mean, the house is...
Is that the one with the big frame on the top roof? The fourth floor?
No. It's just this old little house, but the eave is on my people's that I'm building for. Their eave is on their property. The structure's not, but the overhang is. What are you gonna do? If nothing you can do.
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry.
The second case was another variance. This STB of Charlotte versus City of Charlotte Board of Adjustment, and this one was fairly straightforward. There was an ordinance which a lot of jurisdictions have that with an adult establishment, they have these dimensional requirements that can't be so close to a school, you know, and so forth.
So this is a use issue, right?
Well, it basically, that's a good question. It's dimensional. I think ultimately they call these dimensional because what they're asking for, and I didn't put a whole lot of detail in here, they're asking for a variance on the distance. They're saying, I'm only... 75 yards from a school instead of 100 yards. Or I think in this one it was too close to residential property.
So that area could have that type of establishment.
Right, you could have it.
It just was that
too close.
Variance.
Exactly.
Or distance.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so I just put this in, you know, just to show that the courts don't, you know, always go over everything with such a super fine tooth comb that they're going to kick it back to the Board of Adjustment. This one they said, you know, and there was some evidence to say that it, you know, might have been okay. Some of the neighbors were okay with it. And the board had granted previous similar variances. You know, I mean, Charlotte's so huge, I imagine all these things come through, you know, they have multiple. Yeah. So they had had previous, they may even have more than one Board of Adjustment, as far as I know. I wouldn't be surprised. But they had granted previous ones. And still, you know, it was denied, and then it was held right on up the line, the local court and the Court of Appeals, saying, you know, you set forth that you have looked at it in reasonable detail and deliberated over it properly and gave us sufficient reasons for your decision, and, you know, and it was upheld. So that's kind of...
Now, an interesting question for me is, it says, wasn't sufficient protective separation between the facility. If they built the facility smaller, you still got your 100 feet. Is it from the lot line, or is it from the actual building?
I think that depends on the ordinance, and it usually sets it out, you know, what they're going by. And that's, you know, that can be a whole nother issue if it's not set out. You know, you're saying it's property line, I'm saying it's footprint, you know. And so that, if you know, normally it would tell you which, and, you know, and would it have made any difference if there was a lot of vegetation in between or something? It may have. So a lot of them are very detailed, fact-specific, you know. So anyway, that was just an example that if you, you know, even if it's a close call and there's evidence on the other side, as long as you detail it, you know, they would generally uphold it. And the third one, this Cordell Earthworks case, I just put that in there as kind of as an example. The first two were variances, and this one was an appeal by the decision of the zoning enforcement officer. You know, and I just kind of included that to show the difference between a variance and an appeal. This one, the fella had moved in, rented a property in a residential zone, gradually started doing a landscaping business at this residential property. And, you know, the zoning enforcement person said, that's not allowed, this is a residential zone, you've now started a commercial venture here. And basically that was all found to be correct, and it was upheld, you know, the Board of Adjustment found that that was correct, and the courts did too, including the Court of Appeals.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
This begs the question for me is, if the person's only renting the property, can they appeal it versus the actual owner of the property?
That's a good point. I mean, I think if they have been cited, and what probably happened, it seems like what happens in most of these, the owner would be cited for the activity going on their property. And then if the tenant wanted to come in and argue about whether it was or wasn't commercial or was it exempt because it was really a farm or whatever, they do it what they call an agency agreement, where the tenant is acting as the agent for the owner. But the owner would have to be tied in, since they're the ones technically, you know, in violation.
Probably a violation of the lease as well.
It very well could be. You wouldn't think. Yeah, because normally you'd think if it was a standard lease, you'd say you couldn't violate the zoning ordinance and things like that. But maybe folks don't get this as confused as, you know, often as I think they might, but, you know, an appeal is just a totally different animal than a variance. And, you know, it's just important to make sure that everybody understands, you know, like in this case, you know, the fella, he wouldn't have gotten anywhere trying to get a variance, because that would have been about as clear a use variance as you could have, because it's, you know, it's you're doing at least alleged to be a commercial use in a residential zone. You know, there's just no room to work on that. So they had to go a different angle to say, you know, the zoning enforcement officer has said, you know, you're in violation, they have to appeal at that determination, and basically they're saying, I disagree with the conclusion that it is a violation. And that's, you know, the way that the appeal works, essentially. And that can get kind of tricky. It's so tempting, just because of the nature of Board of Adjustment, to say, well, I don't think we better let them, you know, keep this. This is a residential zone. I don't think we better let them do that. You know, and you kind of got to shift the analysis. Say, well, we're, you know, he's not asking for much for a variance or from the ordinance. You know, the question is, you know, and basically putting yourself in the shoes of the zoning enforcement officer and asking, did they make the right decision? You know, this one is a little more straightforward. You know.
So the example that we had, or the case that we had, that last one, that would have been an appeal if they had moved forward with it.
Refresh my memory on exactly what
the 5-hour meeting we had.
Right. I believe it was an appeal.
Well, they had appealed John's decision, but they had threatened to take it further. So mm-hmm. Then that would have gone to court at that time.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if it's a determination, I think there was one about, like, whether, you know, whether the COD setback applied or something like that. I knew there was something about, you know, things like that, you know, would fall under the framework of an appeal, you know, where they said, where John may say, you know, I think that this setback applies, and you're going to have to, you know, that this, like if he's, I don't know if he does the CAMA type things here, but if he says, you know, CAMA applies, you're going to have to get a CAMA permit or whatever. You know, you'd be analyzing whether that's a correct determination that CAMA permit is even required, you know, as opposed to, you know, a variance from the setback or whatever.
CAMA permits in Carolina.
Yeah, but they do that here too.
But are they doing for both Carolina? Yeah, that's what I thought.
So, or does anybody have any questions about appeals versus variances?
We just look to you if we have a sort of understanding.
I will be here, hopefully. So that's, because as I mentioned in there, you know, you just obviously want to make sure you understand what the analysis is. Because that could be another basis if they, you know, says, you know, that board member thought this was a variance. That might be enough to have to take it back.
Yes,
know?
Sure.
So.
Thank you, all. Appreciate it.
Okay.
That. So. I found it useful in running anyway. Hope everybody else did. Training schedule for 2013. Yes. We've got dates. If you tell what you've done, or
we can do something similar. Have something in the spring, summer, fall, whatever. If you decide.
You can have something in the spring.
Got something here.
It's three.
Select a month. Let's try to steer away from the holiday thing. I know we got caught up in that the one time.
So it would be the 4th Tuesday in April or the 4th Tuesday in May.
What's I would say the 4th Tuesday in April.
What's the date of the 4th Tuesday in April?
Tuesday, 23rd.
That's acceptable.
It's good for me because it's after tax season.
As long as it's not the 26th.
Yeah, the 4th of May would be the 28th, which would take you right into Labor Day weekend, or Memorial weekend, which is kind of a crazy record.
Right.
April 23rd?
So, April 23rd is your spring?
I may have a problem, but I'll let you know. I'm supposed to be in Salzburg 1 week in April. I'm not sure which one.
That was me. Usually one in September, I think, wasn't it? 24th. That's when. Which one does John do normally?
I'm sorry.
When did John last give us his? He's in some like, was a year of this.
Yeah.
It was November, I think. Or October. Okay. 24th of September, is that the word?
So we'll shoot for a spring and April training session and then a September training session?
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, then we had this one, so you'll have three total for the year.
Yep. 24, do you think?
Okay.
It's the day after my birthday, so you can bring me a cake.
Oh, bring me a cake.
Well, the 23rd is a couple of days before my birthday, so. Two cupcakes.
And when was the next one? October or September?
No, September 24th. It's April the 23rd and September 24th. Good. Okay, do we want to have the, what's the name of that guy?
From Council of Government.
Council of Government, back here. Kind of repeated himself.
Yeah, he did. And no, I've had him out for three training sessions. He basically is the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
So I was kind of.
And it's like a 2.5-3 hour meeting.
Yeah. When I was in your position, the council asked me one time if I thought we needed more training. And I went, well, at that time, the board had changed people. And I said, no, because of most of the training we were getting was the same. What's the difference between a variance? What's the difference between an appeal? What Holt did tonight was a little bit better on the fact that he gave us some actual court decisions and how those decisions were arrived. I think that's better training so that we don't make the same mistakes that some of our counterparts in other areas of the state have done. I liked this format better than the one from the Council of Governments. He just comes in and says, okay, this is what the Board of Adjustment does. Yeah, well, we know what the Board of Adjustment does. Let's move on.
What I would find interesting is if we had someone from the county come in and talk to us.
Local?
Like from the county, and to speak with us about the regs and how we fit in with them or what things we could look for that make it easier. Not easier, but to see how they look at things and what are the things that they see globally over the county.
Well, I happen to know the county has a whole lot more variances than we ever do. And I don't know why they do.
Yeah. But I'm not looking necessarily as to why they give more variances or anything. It's just what kinds of things they take into consideration when they hear cases or how often do they get cases or what the types of cases.
The only thing that right now I'm semi-concerned with is a webinar that I attended last Thursday with the school government out of Chapel Hill where three guys got on there and gave their thing about these sweepstakes offers and how one of them got into the fact that with the zoning ordinances and so forth, the Board of Adjustments may be brought in for these hearings and so forth, and that scared the hell out of me. Excuse my French. I don't want to come anywhere near those things because now you're talking big bucks with some amusements and so forth, and they got millions of dollars to hire attorneys, and I don't want to touch those things. That may be something in the near future that's going to be coming up with these towns like Roanoke Rapids and so forth that are banning these through their zoning ordinances. Caroline Beach is going to do the same thing over tonight, but. There may be some things coming up in the near future dealing with the Board of Adjustments having to make a decision on not conditional uses, but whether or not they can even build it. So I don't know how that's going to go, but if you could kind of keep an eye on that.
Yeah, especially by April, we'll probably know a fair about more about that.
They're fortunate on now because we're out of budget now. They're
one thing that briefly on those is the issue of like grandfathering, like for instance, I represent Carolina Shores and their Calabash, and they had put in a requirement that you had to have a special use permit for the sweepstakes. Well, then the court case came in and shut them all down, and so all these places that opened without a special use permit back when they weren't required, and then the ordinance says if you go a certain period, I think it's 90 days, maybe 6 months, without operating, then if you try to come back, you've got to get the special use permit, you know. So that's what, you know, and maybe that's unique, you know, just that they happen to put this requirement in, you know, in the midst of this, you know, being stopped by the courts. But that's something, you know, that could possibly.
How would they bring the Board of Adjustments if it's clearly, I mean, I know we kind of did one earlier with the sign here thing, but how would they be able to come in if they clear, if Carolina Beach, just use Carolina Beach for instance, because you said they're doing it tonight. Carolina Beach says that, you know, you can't, we're not actually safe parlors, it's against our ordinance. How would somebody come in and even, I mean, there's no hardship, I mean, because you didn't have an existing business.
Well, the existing business is there.
There's one there now?
Oh, there's several.
There we go, I don't even know.
I know.
There's one at the Food Line Shopping Center.
Right. Oh, yeah.
There's one across the street from the police department behind the car wash.
I never did.
In that shopping center. And every bar has a sweepstakes machine in it.
Well, I knew about the ones in the bars, but I didn't really equate that to being a sweepstakes parlor. But I understand, I do know about the one over at Food Line. So they're going to come in and say, they're going to go to the Port Carolina Beach Board of Adjustments after they pass the rule tonight and say, we want a variance because we were here, we were existing prior to the ordinance.
I don't know how it's going to happen, but I just know that one of the guys.
Still open? It's open
as of this afternoon. One of the speakers at the webinar from Raleigh was indicating that under the zoning ordinances, they may have a right to appeal that zoning ordinance to the Board of Adjustments for our review.
Okay.
I think some Board of Adjustments actually hear special use requests. I don't think this one does, but so that's one way. And then any if there's any way that John would end up making a determination, you know, that this is not permissible, whatever, then you got an appeal possibility. So those are a couple of different.
Now, like for example, I haven't been to Bud and Joe's in 100 years, but if they've got one in there, law enforcement goes in there and says, "I'm sorry, you're in violation. You know, here's your $100 ticket," and he says, "Wait a minute, I'm gonna appeal the use of this to the board." I don't know how. I don't know how.
The more it stays with law enforcement, the better in terms of the board. Because
my chief wanted to was have the entire town of Carolina, the council, the zoning, everything back up the fact that we want to outlaw these things and get them out of town. So that's when they said, okay, you may want to look at your zoning ordinances, you may want to look at
them. Get ready because it's coming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot at stake.
Well, I don't gamble, so
yeah. Yeah.
If I gamble in Vegas.
Yeah, I would gamble in Vegas. Yeah, I would gamble in Vegas. A whole lot more fun. So, but the way they're getting around these things right now, just to let you know, is that they said that as long as it's plain text, that means there's no display, like you're sitting there and you're playing a hand of cards, you're hitting a button and it does the wheel for slot machines, or roulette, or whatever the case may be. As long as there's not an entertaining display, and your winnings, or the announcement of winnings or losings is not done during that display, then they're going to be legal. It gets around a loophole in the law. So what they're going to do is they're going to walk into the cafe, they're going to buy internet time. That's what they're doing, they're buying internet time. Even now. They're going to walk in there, they're going to have a blank monitor in front of them, they're going to walk in there and hit enter, and they're going to sit there for a minute. And it's going to come up, you won. Then you got to get a ticket, go to the cashier, because it's not telling you how much you won. Mm-hmm. Go to the cashier during that display that goes off and find out how much you won.
That's stupid.
Come back, hit the button.
Final fun.
Hit the button. But the software is right there. We have the one over in Pleasure Island.
It's going to create crime and crazy.
Yeah, the Pleasure Island, this guy sent us a letter today with three attorneys that. Out of Greensboro that wrote a letter to the town of Roanoke Rapids saying with this new technology, it sidesteps the law. He's already bought the software. He's ready to go. And he wanted our opinion, law enforcement's opinion, so I now had to start a case and start an investigation to do it. So we did that because our town attorney said, let's get an investigation started on this letter, this email that was sent to the chief. And now our council is sitting in private session right now trying to figure out what the heck do we want to do about this.
I think you should keep it.
I agree 100%.
We don't, I don't want the headache down there either, but we got.
Well, they already shut down a couple of them they had down there. I mean, yeah, I've seen one at that Madfish Grill, that's gone.
Yes, yes, a couple of them are gone.
So it don't last very long.
They just realized
the handwriting was on the wall. Yeah.
But now Southern Amusements has come out with new software, which is sidesteps the law.
All right.
What a bait.
We'll have training. We don't know what it is yet, but. That was good.
I mean, if there's any board of adjustments that have come in contact with
and
that
we might have Holt come back and do some case studies. We may have John do something again. Okay. We'll let you know. We'll see.
All right. Distribution of new code books. That's the assumption.
Everybody's got their book.
Any questions?
No.
Nice photo.
Do a book report next meeting. I didn't get one before, so this is nice.
This is it.
This is my first one.
Will you take that home?
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
You have to do section 8, 9, and 10.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll hand that off to my daughter and tell her it's hers, and I'll just turn hers in.
Do a paper.
Pop quiz at the next meeting.
Meet again tomorrow. We test you on the contents.
Oh, well. We'll go and tell you what my grade will be. Because I'm going to bed when I get home.
Okay.
We basically put chapter 19 or chapter 9. With
19.
I mean, that's really all I got.
Chapter 19 is what I want to read first.
Don't start with Z.
Zoning.
Well, actually, I probably would do me some good justice to read that.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody got any other business?
No.
Someone want to propose me adjourn the meeting?
Aye.
Second that. Aye. Aye. Reading is hereby adjourned. What is it?
5 till.
2. 3.
Thank you all.
That was very good. Good to meet you. Tell my wife I'll be home at 8.
There you go.
I was worried it was going to be the other guy. I go, even though he's very nice.
I like that cover, that was good.
At least I can tailor it a little bit to this particular group.
Yeah.
Well, plus you're much more, you know, more well-versed about our area, too, and the surrounding areas.
Well, I did represent, I worked with the county for 7 years, so maybe I can provide some insight on that. You know, they granted probably better than 75%, you know, of the variances. It just depends
because
on the group.
It's
kind of a tradition almost. The city was very
liberal.
Yeah. Well, they were more conservative, but the county was
great. Okay. County
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But
I
wrote my taxes for you. Just sat right here. Take me a minute. We're going through chaos right now. It's the IRS.
Good night. Thank you.
You're not
following until the end of January. You know what? I'm not even. We never even begin until April because we want to get our K1 LLCs until
January. They're compressing it to one sector and filing.
Do you need any help with anything?
Right.
So now we've got much shorter
period. I think we're good, Jim. I'll let you know.
In writing it?
You know, well, which session, if you prefer, the earlier one, the later one.
Okay.
You just have to get that AMC thing out of the way.
Ideas or whatever, and I'll put you on the agenda.
A few things
kind of,
okay.
Just keep in touch.
I will.
I'll get that.
All right. Take care.
All right.
What exactly? Quick 2 seconds. What is an alternative minimum tax? I don't even know.
Basically, they said that some people, especially high income earners, were using a lot of deductions to reduce their tax level and therefore not paying a fair amount of tax.
So you pay
so they did an alternative minimum tax, a totally different tax table which calculates the tax. And if you end up below the alternative minimum tax,